Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, we continue our conversation with John DeGraff. Well, this is Dick Staub back with you, and our guest is John DeGraff, along with David Wan and Thomas Naylor, with illustrations by David Horsey. They have done a PBS series that you may have seen, Affluenza and Escape from Affluenza. It's now out in a book, Affluenza, the All-Consuming Epidemic, and I was telling our author that, our guest and author, that it's really the most readable treatment of this subject and very entertaining, and it's one of those things that helps you see yourself in a humorous way, which is probably the easiest way for some of the medicine to go down, because it is a serious issue that we're talking about. The symptoms of affluenza are all around us. You end the symptoms section by dissatisfaction guaranteed. What do you mean by that?
The idea that we're, as long as we believe that the answer to all of our needs, very non-material needs, is through material means. That is, our needs for relationships, our needs for esteem, all of those kind of things can be solved in primarily material ways of consuming and buying goods. It never works, and it becomes ultimately more and more dissatisfying, more and more emptiness producing.
Well, and there is a particular theological nuance for people who are on a faith walk, and particularly for those out of the Judeo-Christian tradition, and you make reference to that when you're quoting Swenson and others about Jesus didn't say it was difficult to serve both man and money. He said it was impossible.
God and money.
You can't do it. And so there is this tension within American Christianity, which by and large, unfortunately, often is simply a mirror of the culture, and therefore is very consumeristic, is often very affluent, and at the same time has this teaching that would indicate that this is a huge area that we need to be very, very careful about.
Well, there's no question that going back to the Hebrew prophets and even in other cultures as well, and certainly with Jesus, you had warnings about the dangers of wealth, about what it could do.
Now, when we look at the causes for this, you start with the words original sin. Kind of unfold how you developed that thought in that chapter.
Well, you know, I look at that as I sort of ask, you know, are people this way just automatically and naturally? And we look at, for instance, so-called Stone Age societies and actually find that, you know, they do pretty well without all this stuff and seem to show fairly high degrees of happiness. But it began to creep in with the desire for power and other things. I mean, this is quite complicated stuff, so I can hardly do justice to it here. I tried to there. What I want to suggest by that is it's not, affluenza is not a completely new thing.
Right.
What I develop in the historical section, though, is how it grows and spreads and deepens throughout history, and particularly in the present since World War II.
Now, what has happened since World War II that has made affluenza really catch on and start spreading like an epidemic?
Well, we have really become the consumer society with the power of TV and the power of other media to deliver messages about the good life being a material life, to deliver the advertising messages, those kinds of things. We've just been convinced more and more that the path to the good life is through the goods life. We had a chance. We almost turned the other way. In the 1920s and 1930s, people were talking about what to do with the great advances in productivity that were clearly coming with Henry Ford's assembly line and other things. And religious leaders particularly, but also labor leaders, were saying, past a point, we need to begin to take time and not just money. We need to shorten hours and things so that working people will have the time to spend with their families, to spend on education, to get to know God, as the Catholic theologians talked about this issue, that past a certain point, it wasn't a matter of just getting more and more things. And they believe that that point was already being reached in the 20s and 30s when we had maybe a quarter or a fifth what we do today. We never have that dialogue anymore about, you know, how much is enough? And we had a tremendous opportunity after World War II. That is, our productivity has tripled since then. We could have taken a portion of that gain in productivity in the form of more time, but we took it all in the form of more stuff. In fact, we work longer hours today than we did in the 60s. And I think that's really the fact that we never had that dialogue and never made that, asked those questions and made a different decision, is really one of the main causes of the problem we're in now.
Now, you and I were talking about Vicki Robin and Joe Dominguez and the kind of making a life versus making a living
making
kind
dying,
of thing.
Yeah,
making a dying. And there is this they do a good job of affixing a price to everything that we do in life, mm-hmm. and asking what do you want out of your life?
Right.
And there's an argument. As a matter of fact, you were at a conference this weekend with Cal DeWitt and some other people. I guess Vicki was there too, about this issue of time and how much we work and so forth. How does that play itself out in terms of causes and solutions?
Well, I think it plays itself out because we just don't ask this choice of time or money. We seem to always take money. We need to ask that choice. All of this that we're spending and what we're doing, what is it getting us? Is there a point past which it's no longer fulfilling and is actually addictive and actually problematic? I think as a country, one of the most significant things we could do to begin to turn this out around is to start talking about shorter working hours or a shorter work year. They're doing it in Europe, and one of the things I like to say is that we could add 10 years of leisure time to our lives if we only worked the same amount that the Western Europeans work.
But in your book, we're kind of slopping into the treatment section now, but
right.
You view that as one of the kind of political things that could be done.
I do.
But the reality is that people could choose to do that now. They just don't. So the idea that someone would impose that on us, either companies or governments, is what makes a lot of people react to that idea, isn't it?
I don't think most people have that choice at all. We have millions of people in this country who are actually forced to work compulsory overtime. We had a situation recently.
But they're afraid if they don't, they'll lose their job.
Absolutely. This isn't the choice of, and this is something that in the European countries is just not the situation at all. The Netherlands, for example, has a law that says that you can tell your employer that you want more time off instead of a raise, that you want it to work less for less pay, and that has to be acceptable.
And so laws are in place to protect the employee who does that. Because if you did that in the United States, the company would say, we'll get somebody that wants to work.
Yes, and we had an incredible example of this. I was just reading about it, the January court decision, and I think the courts made the only decision they could make with the law. This was a Microsoft case where a fellow had been working for 9 years, 60 to 80 hours a week, demonstrating products for Microsoft. He got sick, and the doctors told him he needed to cut down to 40 hours. And he said, look, I got two accounts. I'd rather only have one, work 40 hours, cut my pay. And they said, well, no, we can't do that. This job requires a 60 to 90 hour work week. And
and all of God's people said,
gone.
Amen.
And you're gone. He appealed this and won in the first court, but lost in the second court, that said you simply can make rules. Well, to me, this is kind of high-priced slavery.
Join us for our next conversation with John DeGraff. Thank you for listening to Journeys on the Kindling's Muse.